This is Santiago de Compostela in northern Spain, famous, of course, as a place of Christian pilgrimage. But I've come here to meet up with the world-renowned Pritzker Prize-winning architect David Chipperfield, whose buildings have won accolades from Berlin to Beijing. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Susan Marling, and in this edition of In the Studio, I'll be discovering David's new approach to architecture, which isn't so much about making more beautiful big-budget art galleries or high-rises, as looking at ways to improve people's quality of life in towns and villages. And his brand new headquarters for that venture is in this handsome restored building.
Yes.
Okay. And do we have a view of the vinyls?
The Casa Ria is the soon-to-be-opened new home for David Chipperfield's architectural foundation. With workmen still on site, David and the team are organising the photographic exhibition that will occupy the big entrance hall. But it's late in the day.
What happens at the end of every project? You're trying to do all the things you should have done 2 weeks ago. So there's a bit of cleaning of the floors and the ground floor. It's a panic to the end, but exciting as well, I guess. And then Friday, the mayor will open the building. It's going to be a week of, you know, presenting the project to the public.
This project is unusual for Chipperfield's architectural firm. They have offices in Shanghai and Milan, and especially in Berlin, where David is best known for his work on Museum Island in that city, the inspiring reconstruction of the Neues Museum that was bombed in the Second World War, and the unashamedly modern neighbouring gallery with its white, dramatic, iconic colonnade. But for now, it's not about designing or building buildings. It's about looking holistically at life in towns and villages here in Galicia and seeing how architects might help make life better. The foundation's projects will promote sustainability and better planning. Chipperfield architects become diplomats, if you like, bringing together all sorts of ideas and specialists in this historic building.
It was originally built as a sanatorium in the late 19th century. Santiago was, you know, obviously famous as a place where people came for spiritual repair, but it also became a place for large sanatoriums. Yeah, and this was a private sanatorium. For us, it was interesting because it's more than a house, but it's not out of scale. So we want it to feel like an open house, not an institution. So for us, that's one of the qualities. We are, of course, situated strategically where the seat of government is, where the politicians are, because that's part of our idea, is to poke and provoke, stimulate and open up conversations. The other quality is it's 200 metres or so from the cathedral, 40 metres from the market. We have a beautiful garden and accommodation for 20 students to come and study with us. There will be a canteen run by a very interesting young team who are totally committed to local food, local produce, the Galician traditions. It's not just a restaurant in the base of a cultural institution, it's part of our program. And so he's a living part of that.
So we are now in the market of Santiago de Compostela. And here we are in the building where the fish is. This is the daily catch fish. So this is very important because it's the connection between the productive landscape and the people. It is a place important in economic terms, but it's also a place important in social terms. And it's a place that promotes the sustainable production. I'm Manuel Rodriguez López. I'm an architect and I'm the director of the Fundación Ria, the Foundation Ria.
In looking at quality of life, Chipperfield architects believe that a strong sense of regional identity is important, and that finds expression in food culture.
And I think this happens in many places of the world, but in Galicia especially, food is defining so much the culture, but also territorial planning. the capacity of the land or the sea for producing and for sustaining all the populations that are set there is defining so much the shape of the towns, the shape of the villages, and also the all the infrastructures that are connecting the consumers to the producers.
So where does this holistic approach leave David, who has spent a life's career making impressive buildings?
Our starting point is a different one here. We don't wait for clients. Typically in Berlin and London and Shanghai and Milan, we'd look for resolution in single buildings. Here we've relaxed that and said that we want to look for resolution in the physical environment. So whether that's public space or protecting green land or helping communities promote productive use of landscape, supporting economies. Because if you start to look at the environment from a circular way, you can't just sort of say, well, we're architects, we only do this bit of the circle. So it's quite interesting when you weaponize the environment as a common concern. And of course, changes in our global thinking give us the legitimacy to do that. So we have every reason now. We have sticks in our hands that we can challenge politicians and mayors and say, I think you need to be thinking about this. And of course, they do, because they can't refuse it.
Manuel is taking me out north of Compostela, towards the coast and the more rural areas of Galicia. With the team, his job is on the front line, to connect with local communities and understand their needs and to see what environmental improvements can be made. We're driving through a pretty hilly landscape, but one that is completely dominated by eucalyptus trees, something that Chipperfield architects are working to change.
So we are now in Akurota viewpoint, and this is at the end of the Barbanza Peninsula. We can see from here all the mussel production platforms that are floating on the sea, defining so much the landscape of this place. Also the different ports, the different towns, the different landscapes, mostly productive.
It's incredibly windy.
Yeah, it is.
One thing that you say is that this landscape has changed very much in the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah. The productive landscape have changed so much, mainly defined now by the forestry industry, either eucalyptus for paper pulp or pine tree for fiber boards.
Why have people made that change?
In the 70s, it started a rapid development of Galicia. The shipyards, industries in different sectors appeared. This provoked the abandonment of agrarian activities, and people was left with many hectares of lands that they had to use in another way. So they preferred to plant eucalyptus that needs no maintenance at all for 15 years, have some sort of investment, like kind of retirement plan in life. No? Monoculture has become a problem, and I think everywhere in the world. Here in Galicia, monoculture is reducing biodiversity, is provoking other problems, and the most evident problem is forest fires. From here, we can see this monoculture. We can see big extensions of eucalyptus occupying the whole landscape, but we can also see burnt areas that burned just 1 year ago.
People listening would think, look, you're a group of architects. What architects do is they make buildings, and if they can make beautiful buildings, so much the better. They don't tend to get involved in forestry or, you know, how people are producing food and so on.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the limits of architecture are defined by ourselves, and the more that we explore other areas, the more that we realize that we are influenced by those factors. I think that many decisions that are made before we are commissioned a project come from these kind of things. I mean, the place where the building is set, the economies that surround that place, the way that the building can be related to other activities that surround the building or that place. And we try to explore all those surrounding factors, the way of life of the people, the way they relate to the territory, the way that the food is produced or the resources are managed. Especially nowadays that the sustainability approach is mandatory, now David Chipperfield Architects want to expand the understanding of all these factors, how architecture can contribute to solve or manage these issues, and how all these factors influence in a project of architecture. Next, we are going to a town which name is Corrubedo, and there is where David Chipperfield arrived in the 90s, invited by the architect Manolo Gallego, and spent from since then all his summers bringing his family, his clients, his collaborators, his teams to work here in the summer and enjoying this place.
David has built a beautiful, modern, glassy house here that overlooks the beach. It's where his love affair with Galicia really took root.
We came 30-something years ago, the first time, rather accidentally, with three very small children, and we rather liked it and been coming ever since.
And what is this place?
Well, we're sitting in Bar de Porto in Corrubedo, which was a bar opened in the 1960s. It closed 30 years ago, but my wife, my daughter and myself reopened it during COVID. Now it's run as a local village bar.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. For David Chipperfield, Galicia has become something of a laboratory to explore ideas not so much about making buildings as about making places that are more sustainable and more livable.
Well, I think the climate crisis and issues of resource and sustainability have made us in the architectural profession think beyond individual buildings and made us concerned once again for planning, which has really been abandoned, I would say, in the last 30 or 40 years. Our cities and our environment are the consequence of development. We don't have in place structures or regulations or systems to really anticipate well enough the consequence of whether that's building a road or building new buildings. Amongst the architectural profession, we're all generally thinking in a wider way. Our position in Galicia and our knowledge of this particular place over the last 30 years and the work that we've been doing in the foundation has given us, in a way, access beyond the constraints of an architectural project and into the issues of governance and how you might take a wider view of how to develop and protect our world.
Sitting here in the sunshine among David's friends and neighbours, enjoying a plate of fresh fish, it's not surprising that promoting good quality of life has become a major preoccupation.
All architects are trained to believe that their profession contributes to quality of life, that the quality of environment, the house we live in, the school we go to, the train station, the street that we walk to our school, and these all contribute to our quality of life. That's what we've been trained in. So it's fundamental to the practice of architecture. I think, however, as investment and real estate issues and other more complex forces are influencing our environment, it's more difficult to protect quality of life through decisions. And certainly, if you extrapolate that out of buildings and think about community, then, for instance, public space is probably pretty profound in terms of quality of life.
In these towns and villages, such as neighbouring Palmyra, Chipperfield's work has been on modestly sized projects, but ones that make a big local difference.
If everyone decides that let's sort out the public space in this little village, and if you get everybody on your side, you get the port authority, you get the local mayor, you get the regional government, you get the road authority, you get the bar owners, you get the fishermen, you know, then you can do it. But you need common purpose. You can do that in a small community and see it.
David talks a lot about trust, and that's something Chipperfield Architects has won in Galicia simply because they have no axe to grind.
We are totally independent. We have no political position. We have no commercial position. So what we've really done is to develop a position of trust. And nothing is more powerful than trust.
Palmyra is just in front of us. This is a small town and is a very representative example of a fishing town. Still preserves many of its qualities. It's a strategic location on a hill next to the sea with the church on the top of that hill. But the impact that the road, for instance, have in the town, like a crossing road with dense traffic that divides the town in two halves, that is a dangerous space with the concentration of accidents that is significant, but above all is degrading the surrounding areas of that road. So the buildings are abandoned, the ground floors are empty, and people feel that this is a dangerous and not comfortable place. At the same time, we can also see the transformation that happened in the port area. In the 80s, everything that was infrastructure was a promise for development and prosperity. And in this case, in a small fishing town, they created a big extension, a big concrete platform in which the fishing industry could develop. It didn't happen. Actually, the fishing industry of this town has diminished its intensity, and now it's just a parking lot in the best part of the town.
The reason these villages exist is because of their relationship to the water. And over time, that relationship has been eroded through practical issues like creating more parking areas, creating more areas for the fishing industry. So all of a sudden, the village, which used to have its toes in the water and its identity was very much, has found itself slightly high and dry, isolated by the debris of terrible planning decisions. And so we've been bringing that to everyone's attention, the sprawling out of the edges of these towns into the green land, the through traffic which bifurcates the villages, things like this. All of these erode the physical quality. But as much as that, they also erode the sort of spirit of the place. And of course, if you can go from the small to the big, you know, the biggest issue is how do we keep young people in these peripheral towns and villages? And surely the quality of the place must contribute to that.
Palmyra is a work in progress, but already the ugly parking lot and the fishing infrastructure that cut the town off from the sea have been removed. And there's now a long, low stone bench that curves around the bay where people can sit and picnic and enjoy the view. Plus, the social areas for local people and play areas for children are re-established. Chipperfields are working to stop the unplanned sprawl of new housing and to find new uses for old buildings that have been left empty. There's a new network of buses, and the traffic is being slowed and sorted.
I think the small project we did in Palmyra, it became clear to us that the bad decision-making that conspires together to end up with village centres full of cars, busy roads cutting through villages, houses being built on green land, abandoned buildings in the middle. No one's doing this on purpose. No one is sitting there trying to destroy the community or the environment. Therefore, it's to do with process. You can reassert the primacy of planning, because without planning, we cannot deal with issues of sustainability. It's not possible. That's what dealing with sustainability is going to be about, is planning. A project like Palmyra is an opportunity to untangle the forces that are responsible for making this type of project. Therefore, Palmyra is a modest example of that process.
This is a forest that is a common land area. In Galicia, 22% of the territory is managed by communities, local communities, in a common land system. So normally, Galicia has many problems with forest fires and unstoppable forest fires. In this case, we believe that promoting a multifunctional management of the forest, combining livestock with forest, agricultural activities, but also others like leisure, walking routes, and educational activities are good for the management. So the forest is more alive because it has people working on it, it has people visiting, people watching, instead of a passive management like the eucalyptus. So nobody lives there, nobody works there, and most of the times are massive extensions of monoculture that when they burn, you cannot stop them. Very important in the Galician landscape that actually learning from the past, learning the methods of managing the territory before the 1950s were, there used to be a lot of goats, a lot of sheep grazing in the forest. So there wasn't that much forest, actually. And the animals have to be, again, reintroduced in the Galician landscape. They play a big role in preventing fires, also creating green jobs in the area, combining this extensive farming with other productions like agriculture, forestry, etc. And we really believe that this is the future of the Galician rural areas.
How much is David Chipperfield leading this kind of thinking? To what extent, in other words, is he, you know, underscoring what you do, inspiring what you do?
Yeah, David Chipperfield is very involved in this initiative. I think that after a life of contributing to the world with so many nice buildings, now he's expanding the limits of that. And here in Galicia, what David Chipperfield did was establishing a team of young architects, actually. He delegated a lot of responsibility in this group of architects to develop initiatives, projects, creating frameworks in which other experts can also collaborate with us. And he's directing and leading the direction of this team, but delegating a lot of the responsibility in us.
Well, the team here has had to be really very frontline. They're out there, and therefore they develop experience, friendships with communities. I mean, they know everybody now after 7 years, so they've done the hard grind, and that's given them a lot of confidence, I think. It's given them a sense of, you know, what they're doing.
How does it work in terms of a hierarchy, if you like? How is your relationships with your fellows different here to what it might be in those other offices?
Architects are competitive and rivalrous. We're in a commercial industry where in order for me to get a project, I must prove that my work is better than somebody else's, and I must sell my work to a potential client. And in our commercial office, as we all do, we all have to promote ourselves. The team here with the foundation are not selling anything. They're not timorous in any sense, because we don't depend on the humor of a client or trying to keep a client. We're not selling a service as a foundation. We're actually just asking questions, and uncomfortable questions. So the team has a much stronger sense of performance than in a commercial practice, because they're not in any way tentative to the market. we're doing things for the right. There's no agenda. That gives you power.
The Casaria building works are finally finished. The exhibition mounted, the offices and canteen and accommodation and the lovely garden are all open. It's the culmination of many years of work and of a belief that now and in the future, the best solution to an architectural problem is not necessarily a building.
I think architects are quite good at planning our resources, planning how to protect our resources, especially if we can get off of our single building, career building chair. And it's easy for me to say, because, you know, I'm sitting on a well-padded career and comfortable chair. But maybe it's from that padded chair that I can actually now say, come on, guys, we don't actually have to build anything anymore. I mean, you know, it's easy for me because I built the global concerns of climate change and sustainability have only put wind in our sails. And we can use Galicia as a study. So many of the issues that we're looking at, you know, whether it's traffic, it's communications, it's waste, etc., etc., they are common problems.
In the Studio was presented and produced by me, Susan Marling. It was a Just Radio production for the BBC World Service.